The rough brick pressed uncomfortably against Dean's cheek as he peeked through a crack in the wall. The companions had risen just before dawn and hidden themselves in the maze of old pre-dark ruins. His father figured that since a lot of large sections of pavement and sidewalk were still lying about, the Corps wouldn't be able to travel through the sand under the dead city and would have to walk on the surface. He proved to be right when Dean spotted a group of the Corps eerily rising from the loose sand 100 yards away and then head for the location that had been their campsite. Without the horses to carry the heavier supplies, the companions had been forced to abandon a lot of their excess possessions, the saddles for starters, extra blankets, rope tools, some of the roasted meat, and most of their spare blasters, along with a large leather bag of poisoned water. Ryan had thought that it would make it look as if they were only exploring the nearby ruins for a source of water. As the companions zigzagged into the crumbling array of structures, Christy had found a perfect spot where they could watch the campsite and see what the Corps did. Shifting his position, Dean heard a sprinkle of crumbling mortar fall to the ground and tightened his grip on the iron framework jutting from the side of the destroyed warehouse. Since he was the lightest and the smallest, Dean got the job of climbing up the smashed building and snuggling into a crack in the wall where he could sit and keep watch. Sure enough, a short while after dawn, the Corps arrived. The masked beings came in force and marched straight into the camp. Now they were going through the abandoned items of the companions, inspecting the saddles and tossing bits of spare wood onto the campfire to watch them smolder, then burst into flames. Only one Corps member stood by itself. Man or woman, it was impossible to tell with the thick wrappings, and surveyed the campsite critically, turning over small items with a spear. Squinting to try to see better, Dean could only guess that it was Alar from the respectful way the others acted. Then the leader of the Corps pulled out a small vial from within its rags, and the rest got busy. Sons of bitches, Dean thought. So that was the plan, eh? Wiggling free of the crevice, he walked along the tilted floor until coming to a large hole, then jumped through, falling a few feet down to the next level, and running along a stronger concrete floor until coming to the ragged end of the building. This entire side of the warehouse was gone, sheared and crumbling into the desert sands. However, a large dune was piled high against the outer walls, and Dean skipped down the slope, using speed to stay ahead of the loose sand disturbed by his passage. Near the bottom, Dean jumped clear of some rocks and landed on his boots near Ryan. His father had been standing guard with his long blaster at hand, ready to give cover fire if the Corps spotted Dean. At the noise of his landing, the others came out from behind the rusted shell of a locomotive engine, weeds growing between the wheels, and a buzzard's nest cresting the long cold smokestack.
Well?
You got it, Dad. They came with the first light, poked around our stuff some, then poured that damn Jinkaja stuff on the leftover horse meat and in the water bottle.
Our own free will, my ass.
Christy had spent a bad night fighting the demons in her memory, but the training she had received from her mother pulled her through, and she had the nightmares under control. Mostly, anyway. But if the hammer fell, she was going to blow away Alar with the first round. That perverted twist was never going to be allowed access to her mind again.
Yeah, thought so. I don't care if that bug juice grew me back an eye. If they catch one of us, best to do a mercy chilling rather than take a drink.
Having to ace one of our own. Dark night.
Keeping a watch on their nest, a flock of buzzards circled high about in the cloudless sky, the morning sun already feeling 10 times hotter than it did the previous day. Drawing his blaster, Ryan jacked a round from the ejector and rubbed the oily cartridge on his lips to help ease the growing thirst, then dropped the clip to thumb the round back in with the others.
Let's move out. Stay close and quiet, 2 yards spread. Dean, keep that crossbow ready. Dock your sword and jack a throwing blade. Use blasters only as a last resort. Any noise could put us in a world of hurt.
Nobody commented on the orders, as they had done such things before many times. Darting from one pile of bricks to the next, the companions stayed low and fast, keeping to the sidewalks, pieces of pavement, and fallen walls for as much as possible, until a few hours later they finally had reached the southern edge of the ruins. Twice along the way they discovered a hidden scorpion, and once a huge millipede. Each time, Dean tracked the muties with his crossbow, but they left the creatures alive. A fresh kill would only attract the buzzards, which could in turn summon the Corps. Now, flat, open sand stretched before them, with only some angled dunes rising low on the horizon. The air still carried the sharp tang of salt, and it mixed unpleasantly with the faint stink of the rancid sweat of the companion's clothing. Placing a hand to his forehead to block the bright sunlight, Ryan studied the ground, but there were no more chunks of concrete to use to hide their tracks, not even rocks. From here they had to walk on the bare sand, even though it was the home for the core.
"Make sure you don't walk in unison. Stop every few yards and pat your boots softly as if they were hot. These mutas can probably hear things from underground, and we gotta sound like animals. If they detect marching, they'll come in force."
"Especially with the direction we're taking."
Mildred used a cloth to tie back her riot of beaded hair.
"I just hope the land to the south actually really is forbidden for them to travel."
"Only one way to find out."
Dean wiped his neck with a pocket rag.
"Once there, we might be safe from attack."
JB checked the ammo clip in his Uzi.
"If they come, spread out in a circle, not a pack. They'll be striking from underneath, so we need room to track and fire. We bunch up and we all buy the farm."
"No prob. And if anybody has to piss, do it on your boot to break the force of the stream."
Testing the point of his Spanish sword on a thumb, Doc chuckled softly at that remark.
"What?"
"I beg your pardon for my uncouth laughter, dear lady. It had simply occurred to me that if anybody from my time had uttered such a sentence in polite society, men would have gasped, ladies fainted, children screamed. Then the culprit probably would have been arrested and hauled off to jail."
Christy smiled in a teasing manner, resting a fist on her hip.
"So nobody pissed back then?"
"Not and admitted to such an action. No, madam, never. It was unthinkable."
"And still won't go back?"
"To be with my wife again, yes. But there were many good points, too, Mr. Lauren. Clean beds, hot meals, and no muties. But no place is perfect. Sadly for us all, there is no Shangri-La, and Brigadoon does not exist."
"But there are a lot better shitholes than this place."
Ryan tightened the straps on his backpack. It was bastard heavy, but he added a third belt that went around his hip to help distribute the weight. Hip straps, the pinnacle of pre-dark science.
"And worse, too. You know that for a fact, Doc. We found you in Moxon, and you've been to Front Royal, which is paradise on Earth in comparison."
Every trace of humor drained away from his features as Doc recalled the horrors done to him in the evil town of Moxon.
"Truth indeed, old friend. I shall forever be in trader's debt for what he did to Moxon."
JB set the brim of his fedora against the sun.
"Yeah, trader cleaned out that pest hole, and he'll do the same to the core once we link up with him."
Pressing her canteen to a cheek, Christy savored the coolness, trying to ease her thirst without taking a drink. It was too soon to have another sip, and sucking a pebble wasn't helping much today. She forced herself to lower the water container.
"If it is the traitor..."
"It's him."
Ryan nodded with conviction, stepping onto the hot sand and starting forward at a broad gait.
"Nobody else can make so many folks so pissed off at the same time."
The brief rest break over, the companions broke ranks and spread out in a ragged line across the burning sand, the tiny salt crystals crunching underneath their boots. As the day wore on, the weary travelers stopped talking, almost ceased to think, trying to concentrate solely on placing one foot ahead of the other, then break the pattern with a pause and shuffle. Sweat ran down their faces, soaking their armpits, their backs roasted dry from the blazing sun. Each tried to ignore the chafing of their backpacks and their growing thirst, savoring a delicious vision of the cool of the grandee. The day wore on in mindless drudgery as the companions went up and down sand dunes like driftwood riding the ocean waves. Occasionally, they would walk across black weeds to muffle their steps. Curiously, they were finding more and more local plant life, some real grass mixed in with the weeds, and a few real cacti dotting the barren landscape. While the rest kept him covered, Doc prodded the first cactus with his sword to make sure it was only a plant, and when nothing happened, the man happily cut off chunks of it. Badly dehydrated, the people greedily sucked the spongy pulp for every drop of sweet moisture, then very carefully placed the rinds on sloping dunes to roll far away and disguise the direction in which the companions were going. The dry wind was efficiently filling their footsteps, and even Jack wasn't sure that he could have followed anybody into the heart of the desolate land. Refreshed from the cactus juice, the companions kept moving. The heat of the sun seeped into their bones and made their blasters almost too hot to touch with bare hands, so socks were wrapped around the grips for protection. Then Dean had to unlock his crossbow out of fear the string would break. On they moved, like cyborgs on a programmed task, heedless of anything around them, seeing only the ground before their feet. Less than a mile later, Ryan whistled softly as he found some more cacti. But the welcome sight turned bitter when it was discovered the plant was really a drinker, the bones of its victims lying in plain sight. Traveling up a gentle slope, the companions took a short break and allowed themselves a single capful of warm water.
And take some salt.
Opening a few MRE packs, they shared the little envelopes of iodized powder. It was unpleasant, but vitally necessary. Their clothing was becoming stiff from the salt they lost by sweating so much. If it wasn't replaced, soon they would get weak, then sleepy, and eventually die. Water was all a person wanted in the desert, but salt helped keep a person alive. Pulling out his mini-sextant, JB took a reading on the sun, but quickly replaced the device under his stiff shirt, salt residue making a white band across the material.
Nowhere. We're in the middle of nowhere and heading for abso-fraggin-lutely nothing.
Jack brushed his snowy hair forward to help shade his pale face from the painful sunlight.
I could have told that.
As they stood on the crested ridge, ahead of them stretched an impossibly flat land, utterly devoid of any features whatsoever. Not even a rock or tumbleweed was in sight. Yet thick tufts of weeds and some sort of bracken lay thick along the very top of the break, almost as if marking the line of transition between the desert and the flatlands.
E.A. Abbott, beware.
Right.
Mildred thoughtfully chewed the inside of her cheek. She recognized the reference to the 1886 fantasy novel about two-dimensional creatures discovering the 3D world.
But this is almost too flat. Seems artificial somehow.
Ryan aimed the lapel pin about in a slow arc for a full scan.
Red counter reads clean.
Pulling a compass out of his jacket, JB tapped the device with a fingertip.
No mag fields either.
Saltfall.
Jack grinned simply, as if that explained everything.
Makes sense.
When the nukes were coming down everywhere during Skydark, quite a few of the bombs and missiles missed their coastal targets and hit in the ocean. The thermonuclear detonations created boiling tidal waves that washed inland for miles, forming flat, featureless vistas very similar to this. This was merely a carpet of dried salt, covering the desert underneath.